Good afternoon, Packers fans. Aaron Nagler here with your Packers Daily Chat, coming to you live on the Cheesehead TV social channels. It is Tuesday, and the Pro Day Marathon marches on. Brian Gutekunst and his lieutenants seen at the Texas Pro Day earlier this afternoon. This is that time of year where everybody crisscrosses the nation watching these kids work out as they solidify whatever evaluations they already have and make sure that they are rock solid on their draft boards. Outside of that, not a ton of news, nothing up to date when it comes to the green and gold, but we're always here to chat about the Green Bay Packers here with you, Packers fans worldwide, because that's what we do here at Cheesehead TV. Just dropped a great conversation with Justice a little bit ago. Make sure you check that out when we're done here regarding Shamar Stewart somewhat, but mostly the idea of traits versus production and what we're looking for as we watch these guys transfer from playing the college game versus what they're expected to do and projected to do in the National Football League, which I think gets real short shrift during draft time. And something I hope to explore a little bit more with Tyler this week on the Draft Industrial Complex. But it is, you know, that time of year where people are talking about what a guy did against college competition or within the confines of a college system, whether it's offense or defense. And once again, as usual, that idea of projecting what a guy is going to be doing when he gets to the NFL really gets lost, especially when people are kind of highlighting and emphasizing college production. And I'm not saying production doesn't matter at all. Obviously, that's not the case, but I do think there's context to view that in. Again, I won't belabor that point here, but you should check out my conversation with Justice, as well as this week's Draft Industrial Complex, where we're going to talk about that a little bit more. But today I did want to touch on the fact that, you know, with mostly this kind of heavy lifting of free agency having come and gone, and certainly any of the major components of Packers talent acquisition being put in the rearview mirror and the focus being turned towards the draft for the most part, not completely dismissing the possibility of an addition or two. But, you know, you look at the Packers and where they stand, both with the salary cap and the roster size and construction heading into not just 2025, but 2026, it really becomes interesting when you think about the pretty large draft classes that they've been shepherding along, so to speak, the last couple of years after Brian Gutekunst ripped the Band-Aid off and traded away Aaron Rodgers and went super young, jettisoning a ton of veterans. And he had some pretty large, you know, draft classes. And the first real decisions are going to have to start to be made next year, heading into next offseason in 2026, where the Packers are going to have a lot of financial decisions to make, a lot of cap decisions to make. And those decisions start essentially heading into this season when you talk about who they might want to look to extend and who might be in line for an extension either prior to the start of the season or even in season. Now, I think we can all agree that Zach Tom is probably a number one with a bullet on this list, right? I'd be very, very surprised if he does not kind of get the first crack at it, first extension out of the gate. Whenever they start maybe configuring things to try and not just extend the guys that they want this year, but to kind of get a better picture of what 2026 is going to look like. Like I said, Zach Tom, clear and away, a number one, most likely going to be first on that list. But there are definitely a few other guys that they're going to have to discuss and talk about. And there's a couple that we've already talked about here on Daily throughout the course of the offseason already. Specifically, obviously, the two former first-rounders in Devontae Wyatt and Quay Walker. Now, May is coming up, and that is when the deadline occurs for the possible fifth-year options being triggered. But we've talked a lot about the fact that I would be shocked if Quay Walker gets a fifth-year option. They're just not financially feasible, given the guaranteed number would make him in the top five, essentially, of the inside backers in the NFL. That's not going to happen. But I do suspect the Packers will try to get something worked out either before or in this season. Gutekunst has talked many times about how much he values Walker and how he thinks he's coming off probably his best season in Green Bay. Although it was unfortunate he did miss time with injuries, when he was on the field, especially late in the season, you start to see him really fit into the defense, into the scheme, especially alongside Cooper there as his running mate. I don't doubt that he will be maybe not high on the list, but on the list for guys who get extended some point here in the next 6 months. I'd also include, obviously, Devontae Wyatt there. I think there's a small chance, not a great, but small chance that he gets the fifth-year option trigger pulled. So maybe that extends that decision out for another year. But I think that's another guy who will at least be spoken to. His representatives will get a call regarding, well, we'd love to get you locked in here earlier rather than later. I do not doubt for a moment, though, that Wyatt, there's a decent chance he wants to play out a full season here in this scheme where he was really productive last year when he wasn't, you know, missing time with injury. If he gets another good, solid, productive year under his belt, he can make some real money on the open market. So I think, again, that's something somebody the Packers will approach, but I'm not fully confident that a deal gets done there, simply because I do think Wyatt can make a lot of money if he's able to get to the market. A couple others that I'll just highlight that I think will obviously be topics of conversation are Romeo Doubs, who it's a really tricky evaluation here when you talk about what he's done so far, right, in his, you know, early parts of his NFL career. He certainly seems to fit the offense well, absolutely has a connection with the quarterback. Certainly not a dynamic playmaker, not a guy that you would circle as going to be one of the top wide receivers in the game, but absolutely a security blanket of sorts for your emerging young quarterback. I could see them approaching Doubs about some kind of, quote, team-friendly deal. But, you know, I do also think that that's something that most likely would happen in season. I think they would probably want to get a handle on how he looks first month or so of the season coming off those head injuries. I know Brian downplayed the significance there at the combine, but you never really know. I think they would like to get through the summer and into kind of this regular month or two into the regular season, and then they would probably approach them about the potential of a contract extension to keep him in Green Bay. And then the last guy I want to hit on, and I think this is the real trick here, and what I think is probably a key to a lot when 2026 rolls around, is Rashid Walker at left tackle, where, man, the tackle market this offseason went absolutely bananas, right? There are guys who, having coming off pretty, I'm not going to say subpar years, but not great years, making boatloads of money and getting the bag, so to speak. And if you're Rashid Walker and you're sitting there watching the addition that they've made here along the offensive line to a guard who did get paid some decent coin, and you know they drafted a left tackle 1 year ago, and you got to suspect there's a decent chance that there's going to be an open competition there during training camp. I think this is a case of they're going to let this play out throughout the season. But the longer they let it play out with Rashid Walker, the closer he gets to potentially hitting the market, I don't know why Walker would ever even talk to the Packers, because he can make some real money on the open market and probably way more money than the Packers would be comfortable pulling the trigger on after signing Zach Tom to an extension to double down there after having just drafted a tackle and give another, even though he is way out far outproduced from his draft status as a former seventh rounder. He's a very good player, but I do think if you're Walker, I don't know why you would sign early. Now, obviously, the guaranteed money, having it in your pocket as opposed to every down in and down out, you're risking a potential injury and then you never hit the market, at least not as a fully healthy prospect. I understand the allure there, but I got to think, much like, you know, Devontae Adams did a couple years ago, he's so close, 1 year more, and he plays a premium position in the NFL where he would make an incredible amount of money if he's allowed to hit the market. And I think I get my guesswork right now, given how they're set up and given what they've got to deal with in 2026, I suspect they kind of let that play out this season. Now, maybe they approach him at the end of the year, even at next offseason prior to the start of free agency. But man, I'll be surprised if Rashid Walker bites. I think he'll do everything in his power to hit the market, as he should. Because like I said, I think he'll make a boatload of money. Hello to everybody in the comment section. So good to see everyone chatting it up. Jim's here. Ben, what's up? Guitar Ted. Hebe Sheboygan. What a phenomenal handle. Good to see you all. William James starting us off. Thanks for being a Care of the G Club member. Appreciate you, man. Given the talent of Zach Tom, would you rather he stay at right tackle or move over to left tackle? I think you want your best lineman on the left side. William, I know that's been kind of conventional thinking for a very long time in the NFL. I'm not entirely sold that that's the case any longer. I understand the idea of the blind side, right? Your right-handed quarterback. But man, given how multiple defenses have become, and you know they're making sure that their kind of best edge rusher is going to follow around wherever you're not, as far as your best tackle goes. I like the idea of potentially moving Tom to left tackle, but man, it's hard to see a guy who's been so good for a number of years now at right tackle make that jump after they just drafted a left tackle. Now, who knows what their designs and plans are for Jordan Morgan, right? Maybe they have already come to the decision he's going to be a guard, point blank, and that's where he will stay. Maybe that's all he does this summer is fight out with Sean Ryan for that right guard spot. And then maybe perhaps they have that conversation. But he is, like I said, he's locked it down at right tackle for a couple years now, played at an all-pro level. I'd be surprised if they made the jump, but I'm not completely ruling it out. As we've seen, they are not gun-shy about moving pieces around and getting the quote-unquote best five out on the field. Autumn G, how are you? Thanks for the super chat. Hey, Nags, do you think Goody will go to the draft to fill the cornerback room, or do you see him getting some cheap depth in free agency yet? Excellent question. I'd be surprised if he signed another free agent. Obviously, he added Hobbs. If someone, say, is out there late, prior to the draft, like a week or so, and they can get him in on a one-year deal, maybe he pulls the trigger. And there is a name that is kind of interesting that's out there, and that's obviously former Packer Rasul Douglas. I do think the issue here is Rasul is coming off a pretty down year there in Buffalo. And the other issue is once you bring him in, he's not contributing on special teams. And it really shuffles your room in a way that, well, if you sign him and he balls out in camp and he wins that job, quote unquote, well, then you probably have him on the perimeter outside of Nixon. And then you've got Hobbs, who you just signed and who can play in or out. So maybe you kick him in, but then you're relegating Bullard to the bench. There's just a lot of moving pieces there where that's just an example of one guy who could maybe come in and provide some depth, but he's got to be able to contribute on teams. He's got to be able to, you know, obviously have very minimal impact on the cap. I just don't see that happening. I do think there's a decent chance that they invest in corner in the draft, either early or late. It could be anywhere along those 3 days. That's just how I see it right now. We'll see what occurs here in the next couple of weeks. Maximilian, what's going on? Thanks for being a Care of the G Club member. I doubt a trade up in the first round happens, but given the number of returning players, does general manager Nagler move up to get another player in the top 100? I'm always for it. My thing, though, is kind of what we were talking about here at the start of the stream and looking into the future. You know, they're going to have to start making decisions on who to pay from these previous classes. They're probably going to want another influx of young, cheap talent next year. I'd be surprised if they started trading away picks either this draft or, you know, potential 2026 draft picks to try and jump up, unless, of course, there is a, and this is always the caveat, right? Unless there's a prospect that they are completely sold on. You know, I mean, Brian was pretty damn aggressive going to get Christian Watson, right? So to say he would never do it, obviously that's false. But I think he would have to be, like I said, pretty sold on this, how the fit and how special the player is to give up all those kind of swings of the plate, so to speak, that keeping those picks would provide. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'd be surprised given what they're headed into next year contractually. And Tadek, that sounds like a Star Wars name. Thanks for the super chat. Sources say Clay Matthews' hair is as fresh as a 20-year-old, so bring him back. Greetings from Germany. I'm sensing your tongue is firmly in your cheek there, but you never really know. I mean, look, we've got Facebook posts talking about how Clay is going to come back and coach the defense. So who knows? Who knows? What else we got here, folks? Imjin Rat. What a name. Thanks for the super chat. Hey, Nags, love what you do and all the stuff you educate me on that I miss watching TV. Well, that's very kind of you. I'm waiting for a but here, but thank you. Really appreciate it. Rai Rai says, love the Packers' approach to player acquisition. Smart, measured, usually effective, rarely over-leveraged. Great recipe for long-term contention. What is this, like, measured, considered chat? What is this, the internet? Rai Rai, you know I agree with you, and I also understand the misgivings that some of the more vocal members of the fan base, maybe minor, you know, voices, minority voices, but very vocal voices, talk about, okay, that's all well and good, but then they never pull the trigger and go for it, right? They never make that big move. They never take a swing to potentially, yes, put them in jeopardy long-term, but to really go for it. I know we've talked about this. We'll go round and round about it probably for the rest of my life, but, you know, I appreciate the Packers almost always being in contention for most of my adult life. I've seen the other side. I don't want to go back. I get it. Mileage may vary for others, but that's where I live. Okay, the back and forth about Soder's name being Sober or Soder, and Soder himself chiming in and saying, I'm definitely not sober, is sending me. Good stuff. Ooh, Pete, that's an interesting question or observation or potential development. I think they are going to play Bullard at weak side linebacker some. Man, I'm not going to discount the idea. I'm not going to say it's impossible. I do think weak side backer is probably going to be Edrin Cooper's domain for the most part, as far as a traditional weak side guy, but you'll certainly see him and Quay kind of mixing things up in the middle. I like the idea of Bullard being used in a linebacker way. I'm not going to say it's completely out of bounds, but I do think, you know, the physicality that you've seen, his ability in the slot, that's primarily where I believe he'll probably end up. But hey, that's what the offseason's about, right? Tinkering and trying to come up with interesting ways to get guys on the field, maybe in certain packages or against certain opponents and types of offenses. Maybe they go that route. Never really know, man. Oh my God. There's a white David Whitehurst mentioned in the chat. All is well now. J-Rock, what's going on, man? Rebreverich, whose name I cannot pronounce. Rebreverich. I think maybe pronouncing how you spelled it. Maybe I lost that wrong. Lost his job because the D-line underperformed, but all the receivers also underperformed, and I believe their coach kept his job. Why the difference? Because there's probably a little bit more context needed when you're talking about wide receivers. Now, look, no coach is telling a wide receiver or coaching up a wide receiver to drop the football, right? And their major issue last year was drops. Now, you can certainly look at the tape and talk about route spacing, combos, maybe reading defenses, the way the quarterback is, things of that nature. But that's a lot more kind of involved than, okay, their front four couldn't win a one-on-one. And they were maybe being asked to do things that hampered them in that regard. Rebreverich was an edge guy before he was a coach for the entire defensive line. And it didn't really seem to kind of improve no matter where he was kind of tasked with handling position groups, as opposed to, like, you watched Mike Smith when he was the edge coach under Pettine and then initially with Barry. I mean, that was, he's a very good coach, right? And his guys were productive. I do think because of the shifting landscape, so to speak, on the offensive side with the offensive coaches, they'll give that group another year. And also the kind of, you know, caveat of how young they are at that position and the offense somewhat changing style, so to speak, last year, coming off of everything they did in 2023 and what they were being asked to do in 2024 being slightly different, especially in the passing game in relation to what they were working on in the power running game. I think there's a decent chance they let that breathe for a year. Can't be firing people willy-nilly each and every year. I think with Rebreverich, it was much more about the kind of ongoing kind of pattern there after Mike Smith was gone that led to his dismissal. So that's not to say, look, if the wide receivers don't take the jump that they're expected to make, they don't see the development that they think should be there, then that's a conversation. But I don't think 1 year, especially after coming off of 2023 where these guys look so promising, I don't think 1 year gets you a hook. That's just my viewpoint on it. Hey, Brian, I understand this, Brian. It's always give this guy another year to develop. Fish or cut bait? Man, I get it. I understand it. That's not how the Packers operate, but I understand it from the outside looking in. And, man, God knows I've been there, man. I've talked about this so many times. I've vented about it throughout the years. But at some point, you do have to come to the realization, I guess I'll say, that the Packers will almost always give that guy another year and allow him to develop. That is their program. And their program has produced a lot of really successful and talented players. That doesn't make it any less frustrating in the moment. I completely understand it. But over the course of 30 years in this system, in this program, in this way of acquiring players and developing them, they've been pretty good. And that doesn't mean that there aren't misses. That doesn't mean there aren't guys they hang on too long. I get it. Trust me. Like I said, I totally understand. But it is how they operate, and they have, for the most part, been pretty damn successful. Soder, that's so good. It's so true. Packers consistently scored upper 20s, and we hate the offense. I mean, look, again, there is context here, though, right? You're right. They scored a bunch, man. They were a top five offense, no doubt about it. Now, how much of that was empty calories? How much of that were in games where they got their ass kicked or handed to them early in the game, and they make quote-unquote furious comebacks against teams that are just protecting a multi-score lead in the second half? And that doesn't mean they didn't do it. Doesn't mean that those yards and points don't count. But there is context there. You know, how you play against a team when the game is imbalanced, and I think you heard Brian talk about this at the end of the year, their ability to control the football game in all aspects, but specifically on offense, was lacking in a big way last year. And so I understand when people grouse about the offense. It's all well and good. You can come back from 21 down, but you're 21 down because you did jack shit for three quarters. Now they're playing two high safeties and way off the line. They're not jamming receivers. Ooh, look at this guy. He caught a 15-yard pass when he's against real soft zone in the fourth quarter. Well, wonderful. Where was that in the first quarter when they were up at the line of scrimmage jamming you and they had the safety in the box and you were trying to get off man and you could do jack shit? You know what I mean? I mean, I'm not completely dismissing your point because you're right. They were very productive, but I understand people's misgivings about the offense. Paul, this is very generous of you. Thank you so much. I love your patience. Not all Packers fans are as knowledgeable as you. Well, knowledgeable should probably be in quotes there. I appreciate it. I think it is kind of funny how being a father has literally informed being a content creator as far as just my life. You know, prior to my kids being born, I was not as patient as you probably view me today. And certainly I understand anybody watching watch parties with me would probably not say that I'm patient, but you know, in the heat of the game itself, yeah, I'm emotional and a wreck and all the things you expect from a football fan. But Monday to Saturday or the off season, it's good to pull back and look at it from a 30,000 foot view. That's just me. That is just how I operate. Randy, this is a good question for life. What would Ron Wolf do? It's always a good question. It's something I ask pretty much before I make any decision ever. All right, maybe that's a little bit much, but it's not far off. Michael, I love these questions. How many years does Ed Policy give Goody before he's on the hot seat? Why is everybody so quick for everybody to be on the hot seat? Now, look, there's no question that that goal and the standard is a championship, right? Hopefully plural. And that is what the expectation will be when Policy takes over as president and CEO of the Green Bay Packers. I think there's going to be maybe not a lot of rope, but I think, you know, Goody's going to be allowed to operate same as he's been allowed to operate under Mark Murphy. I don't doubt for a moment that if they are successful and win a bunch of games and get to the playoffs and are in contention and are actual Super Bowl contenders for a year, two, three, Goody might get an extension. For everyone praying that he's on the hot seat, and I'm not saying you are, Michael, but you know, all this, all these kind of fan viewpoints always are about Matt and Brian being on the hot seat. What happens if they win a bunch of games and lose in the playoffs, but are knocking on the door? They probably get an extension. But for whatever reason, no one seems to ever want to talk about that. But look, if they lose, they go nowhere, then yeah, Brian probably gets put on notice and says, well, it's time for you to put up or shut up, and then we can all talk about it. But I mean, we're at least 2 years from away from that conversation. You know, as with everything involving the Green Bay Packers, you got to take a breath. You got to draw it back and look at it 30,000 foot and look at the long view, because that's how they operate. I don't know what else to tell you. All right, everybody, I'm going to have to get going. Cannot thank you enough for hanging out, talking Packers each and every day, Monday through Friday, right here on the Cheesehead TV social channels. Please do me a monster favor. Hit like on the video, subscribe to the channel. And then tell your friends and tell your family, Cheesehead TV, we are devoted to Green Bay Packers fans worldwide. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great night. Patreon members, Carry the G Club members, do not forget happy hour at the top of the hour. I'll see you there. The information is on your respective pages. The rest of you, thank you so much. Talk to you tomorrow. Have a good night. Go Pack, go.